Welcome to the Natural Healing Show. Keep it natural. Be the Natural Healing Show.
Hello, you are listening to the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Catherine Kerrigan, medical intuitive healer, Amazon number one best-selling author. You can find out more about me and my work at CatherineKerrigan.com and UnlimitedEnergyNow.com. While you're there, definitely sign up for my newsletter so you can learn even more about how you can heal yourself naturally. Now, our guest today is Lisa McCourt. Lisa McCourt is author of the book, Free Your Joy, The 12 Keys to Sustainable Happiness. And you can find out more about Lisa McCourt and her wonderful work at her website, lisamccourt.com. Welcome, Lisa McCourt.
Thank you so much, Catherine. What a joy to be with you today.
Now, Lisa McCourt, what exactly is joy?
Well, in Joy School, we identify joy as a freedom feeling. It is our most true, natural state of being. And the only reason we aren't experiencing ourselves as that joy that we are is that we all have accumulated those obstructions to being able to recognize ourselves that way. So in Joy School, we just peel away the obstructions so that joy is the ability to witness yourself with total compassion, total lightness and ease, no matter what perfectly natural human emotion you're experiencing.
Okay. Beautiful explanation. Now, you mentioned Joy School, and I understand that you run a Joy School. What is Joy School?
Joy School has had a lot of different configurations over the 20 years since I've been giving these joy trainings. It currently is all online ever since COVID. There are some live events that we do down here in South Florida, and I had one in San Diego a couple of weeks ago, a retreat. So there are occasional live events, but for the most part, the group that's enrolling now meets four times a month, and we make the time all different for different time zones. And it's really just a love incubator where people are held and supported in the unfolding of what's most true and real for them. It's that attunement that so many of us were missing in our earlier development that is really the cause of those obstructions to our joy. So we correct that, we heal the obstructions with the attunement of a super loving group where we all take the joy practices out into our lives and come back and report on how we're doing with that and compare stories and notes. And just it's a continual evolving into more and more joy.
Now, as a medical intuitive healer, when I'm working with clients who feel anxious or depressed, I work on both what I call both ends of the spectrum. What do I mean by that? I help them figure out what they need to do to overcome anxiety and or depression. And also, I look at the top five things that will help them feel happy. Why is looking for what will make us feel joyful so critical?
Sure, yeah. So there are a few threads I could pull there. The first that I'm so passionate about is that we've all been conditioned to believe that things out there are going to make us happy. Once we have the money or the partner or the job or the degree, then we can be happy. We have the equation backwards. Happiness is entirely an inside job. Once we learn the skills for joy, for connecting to that joy and bliss that we all are at our core, then we're sending out a different vibrational frequency that just kind of puts all those things out there effortlessly into place anyway. But it's the irony is that once we understand that connecting to joy is what really matters, those things become less important. Those things that we thought were going to make us so happy actually become less important. So yes, I love the idea. You know, we all should be looking at what in my life is lighting me up and calling to my soul, and what are the things that are depleting my energy, as you suggest there. But I just wanted to point out that other piece of the puzzle too, is that it's really not about what's going on out there.
Okay. Now, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, from 2015 to 2018. And I'm going to point out that was before the pandemic. And during the pandemic, the levels of anxiety, depression were, you know, hovering around 30%. But before the pandemic, over 13% of Americans over the age of 18 took antidepressants. How can learning how to find joy help people get off pharmaceutical drugs?
Yeah, the statistics are so sad. I feel like I've heard, you know, even higher ones than what you're stating there. And, you know, in part, it's just another reinforcement of this idea that we need something outside of ourselves to fix what's going on within us. I know that there are folks who benefit from pharmaceutical assistance, but like you, Catherine, I definitely feel there are better alternatives and ones that reinforce the truth that we have everything we need within us to live healthy, joyful lives, right? It's just a matter of putting some time and energy into identifying and releasing the obstructions. And in my world, that means meditation, breath work, self-inquiry, being held in that non-judgmental space I was just talking about. Because those obstructions are the result of either having had some sort of intrusive trauma during our formative years. Very many of us experience that. But the other less obvious way that the obstructions form is from neglect, just simply never having had the attunement from our caregivers that's necessary in order to grow and live without forming those obstructions. You could have had all your physical needs more than provided for and still suffer the neglect of not adequate attunement. Because it's a really rare parent today who can hold loving, non-judgmental space for a child to develop into whatever that child is naturally inclined to be, right? Without any attempts to shape or mold or change who the child is becoming. It would mean witnessing with just loving curiosity what's emerging from this child, celebrating it no matter what, whether the person is naturally introverted or extroverted or motivated or unmotivated, no matter how masculine or feminine the child is being or how much like the parents or unlike the parents. That's what would be required to raise a child without any obstructions to their joy. And most parents miss the mark there. And that's why most of us have these obstructions. So yeah, I think that there are a lot of things that can be done other than antidepressants and pharmaceuticals for sure.
So we're touching on pharmaceuticals. So again, during this period of 2015 to 2018, again, pre-pandemic, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control says 17.7% of American adult women and 8.4% of American adult men took antidepressants. Lisa McCourt, why do you think there's so much focus on pharmaceutical treatment of depression rather than finding joy when joy cannot be found in a pill?
Yeah, I think it's representative, again, of just how conditioned we all are to seek happiness outside of ourselves where it can never truly be found. I've seen lots of empirical evidence lately for natural psychedelic microdosing protocols that work far better than pharmaceuticals. It's still looking to something outside of us, but it's probably a step in the right direction. I'm curious your thoughts on that, Catherine.
Well, I actually do medical intuitive readings for a center in Costa Rica and have for about the past 8 years. And I do medical intuitive readings before people go actually down and use a plant medicine called Iboga. And Iboga is the strongest plant medicine in the world. And it is incredibly grounding and it detoxifies your brain. So, and one of the things that I really support about it is that it helps people get off every drug there is, you know, so, and as we know, addiction is a side effect of being deeply unhappy. And for people looking, you know, not just at the legal drugs, but the illegal drugs.
I wondered about that. So within your natural healing protocol, those natural medicines are something that you would embrace as a solution.
Yes. So Iboga is illegal in the US and the UK. It is legal in Costa Rica. I don't administer any Iboga. I just do the medical intuitive readings for people before they get there so that the people at the Healing Center in Costa Rica know best how to help each individual.
What a beautiful gift.
It's a very rewarding work. Now, your book, Free Your Joy, The 12 Keys to Sustainable Happiness, talks about 12 keys to sustainable happiness. So what are those 12 keys?
That question has a really long answer. I could list them by name, but that's probably not going to make much sense out of context. So I'll just sum up the trajectory of the keys, which will probably be more beneficial. The first keys that we all practice when someone comes into Joy School or starts the book are all about becoming the observer of our thoughts and feelings. We humans love our thoughts. We tend to identify with our thoughts and believe them as though they're some sort of accurate portrayal of reality, which they are not. So the first steps in the Joy School journey are always about getting better and better at becoming the observer of that crazy ticker tape that's running constantly through our heads. Researchers tell us we have between 70,000 and 80,000 thoughts per day. Research says that those are pretty much the same thoughts we had yesterday and last week and last month and so on. And the evidence says that the vast majority of those are negative thoughts. So once we get better and better at observing this tendency, watching it, we start to see the absurdity in it and how absolutely depleting of our joy our typical thought patterns are. So from there, once that skill gets pretty solid, it opens up a whole new world of self-inquiry, where we get to learn with self-compassion and non-judgment what it is that's causing us to create these situations and are out there that seem to be the thieves of our joy. Once we can see how and why we're creating them, that's when we can change the blueprint to create differently. Huge game changer there. So some of the later keys focus on our relationships, some focus on manifestation, trusting our intuition, but always with that bigger understanding that we're just pushing pieces around the game board and none of these huge decisions and choices that we feel like are crushing us, they're not nearly as weighty and consequential as our thoughts make them out to be. We are the cause of our suffering 90% of the time. And when we understand that, that's when we start seeing how to release the suffering from our lives.
Great. So the first step is becoming the observer. And what are the next steps?
Well, the becoming the observer encompasses the first. I kind of gave you a hop and a skip through the steps there. One of the ways, if your listeners wanted to practice becoming the observer, one of the really preliminary things that you can do is to set your watch or phone. Some of my Joy Schoolers go to that extent, or you can just try to remember, but just check in with yourself throughout the day. I always say a minimum of 3 times in the day and more if you can. And just ask, you want to just like go inward for a moment and ask, darling, what are you feeling? I always have my Joy Schoolers start using terms of endearment with themselves, with that voice in their mind. And that's hard for a lot of people because those voices in our mind that talk to us don't always talk to us kindly. So one of my Joy Schoolers would just break into tears every time she tried to call herself darling, but just darling, what are you feeling? And then notice the tendency to judge our feelings, to deny them, make them wrong, and consciously override that tendency so that we're just noticing with compassion whatever it is that we're feeling. And then, darling, what do you need? Because very often it's so easy to meet our own needs. We just don't take the time to get that clarity around what might make us feel better. We might just need 5 minutes to be alone and quiet. We might need a little nap. We might need to open a window and let some fresh air in. We might just need a cup of tea. And sometimes when we ask, darling, what do you need? A really big need is identified that's not easily met, but that's still okay because opening up the attention on that, just acknowledging that within us is what sets the energy in motion to start paving that energetic pathway that might lead us to this bigger need that we don't feel we can meet.
Okay. And once we get good at becoming the observer, what are your next steps in the 12 keys to sustainable happiness?
As I said, one of them is about building our intuition. We have a whole key developed, devoted to listening to that voice, because we all are intuitive. We all have had intuitive hits. We all know, what that is and feels like, but it's so not something that's acknowledged or praised or that we've ever gotten kudos for, most of us in this world that we live in today. So I always talk about how your attention is your most valuable commodity. Your attention is what, how you build anything in your life and how you deplete things in your life. What we're giving our attention to is always going to grow. So once we start paying attention in specific ways to our intuition, we'll be able to see it where it's already working in our lives. And that acknowledgement really cranks it up. That's something that I came relatively late to in my spiritual journey. I thought people who had psychic abilities, intuitive people, that was just some amazing skill that some people are born with. So I'm a relatively recent convert to this idea that it's something that we all have the ability to work that muscle. So there's a key dedicated to that. As I said, there's a key dedicated to relationships, which is a lot about shadow work, recognizing that not only are relationships with the people in our lives are mirrors for us, but everything in our life we're in a relationship with, right? You're in a relationship with your body, in a relationship with your house or your home or your car. And wherever we're feeling like our joy is being depleted, dragged down, it's just showing us where we've got some unhealed frequency in that relationship. So we have specific exercises that we do, meditations that we do to heal our relationships with different aspects of our life. And it's really almost the same as how you would heal a relationship with a person. It's about forgiveness work. We all know the power of forgiveness, right? It's not about letting the other person off the hook or making it okay, whatever's happened. It's just for us. When we're carrying that resentment, when we're carrying that judgment, that's what's pulling down our vibration. So we have a lot of processes for healing relationships with different aspects. And especially these abstract constructs, right? Like we have a relationship to romance. We have a relationship to money. And within those relationships, it's not like your relationship with your brother where there's two people that have to, you know, have their own stuff figured out. It's really all on us when we have a relationship with an abstract construct. So it's not as hard to change up as we might think because it's just getting the energy right over here. You know, money isn't bringing anything to the relationship it has with us. It's all what we bring to the relationship with money.
Okay. And with that, let's take a break and listen to a message from one of our commercial sponsors here at UK Health Radio. My name is Catherine Kerrigan, medical intuitive healer. We're listening to Lisa McCourt talk about joy.
Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So, Lisa McCourt, author of Free Your Joy, The 12 Keys to Sustainable Happiness. Here at the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio, I have the great privilege of interviewing experts such as yourself about all sorts of subjects on natural healing. And one of the people that I've had the privilege of interviewing was a gentleman who founded an app called Joy Plus. And in his opinion, the two key aspects to joy were gratitude, and we understand gratitude, but also optimism, which is having something to look forward to, even if it's like, I'm really looking forward to petting my puppy in the morning, or I'm really looking forward to that cup of coffee, or taking a walk in the beautiful fall sunshine. So how do gratitude and optimism contribute to our joy?
100%, of course. And with the case of gratitude, a lot of times we almost kind of like that word almost gets cringy because we're not having authentic gratitude where we feel like we should, right? I should be appreciative that I have a roof over my head. A lot of people don't. I should be appreciative that my body works in the ways that it does, even if my knees are busted, you know, whatever it is. So I think that with gratitude and optimism, we have to find the inroads to where it's authentic, because just paying lip service to either of those things is not going to shift our energy. It's not going to really do anything. Sometimes it can do the opposite if we're judging ourselves for not being more naturally optimistic or more naturally joyful. So it's about finding those inroads. One of the later keys that you were asking about has a practice week by week. All of the keys have a week by week practice. It's meant to be read over the course of a year, and you bring this one thing into your life every week. And one of them is a really beautiful way to find those inroads to what we're actually grateful for and expand that. And with optimism, yeah, they say that there's some genetic coding for optimism. About 50%, they say, is inherited, whether you have an optimistic or pessimistic outlook. But even that is so challenged now by epigenetics, by pioneers like Bruce Lipton and Greg Braden and Joe Dispenza. They're showing that even if we had a genetic disposition toward pessimism, that's malleable. We can change that. It's still a muscle that we can build. It's still something that with a little commitment, with a little dedication, we can elevate for ourselves. And it comes down to where we're placing our attention, you know, because we all have things in life that we could look at that make us really happy. And we all have aspects of our life we could focus on that are going to drag down our vibration. So I love both of those.
Now, as you mentioned, so many of us, when we want to feel happy, we focus on the outside. We try to change the way that we look, or we get a new job, or buy a new car, or get a new partner. In your opinion, why is joy an inside job?
Yeah, because all those things that we think we want, they're just ever morphing carrots at the end of the stick, right? We think we want it, and we all can relate to this of all I wanted was that one thing, and we get it. And then we tend to put them over here. It's like, oh, I finally have a loving partner. Put that over here. Now we need a house. Oh, I got the house. Okay, put it over here. Now I need that income stream. Okay, I got to have steady income stream. And we just sort of like shove it aside so that we can put all our attention on these things that I don't have yet, or these problems I have to solve. And it's just a grave energetic error that most of us make. And instead of looking at what we've accomplished and what we have and soaking every bit of joy out of it that we can, understanding that it's going to be temporary, because we are here to evolve and grow. And we put so much weight in our desires. And in Joy School, we really try to just release that weight, because there's nothing wrong with having desires and bringing them to fruition. That's part of the fun of the human package. That's part of what we're here for. But all of that goes so much more smoothly when we can be less heavy about it, when we can recognize that, like, yeah, I might get this thing, I might not. And when we release the need on the things that we want, we're able to have them so much more quickly and easily and smoothly.
Now, in my work as a medical intuitive healer, I talk about the five levels of healing. The physical body, we know what that is. The energy body includes your chakras, your breath, and the acupuncture system. The emotional body, and I love that you talked about you're not your feelings, you're not your thoughts. The mental body is your thoughts and beliefs. And I love that you talked about observing your thoughts. And then finally, there's your spiritual body, or your soul, the part of you beyond all space and time. Now, in yoga, and I've taught yoga now for 28 years, they refer to your spiritual body as your Anandamaya Kosha. Anandamaya Kosha translates as the body of bliss. And in yoga psychology and in yoga philosophy, when we focus on our spiritual body, then we can get into a bliss state. In your opinion, as the author of Free Your Joy, why is it so essential that we connect to our spirituality in order to feel joy?
Just because that's where it is for the most part, right? And we've been so, in Joy School, we use Eckhart Tolle terminology that I learned from him over a dozen years ago that he doesn't use very much anymore. We talk about our horizontal selves and our vertical selves, the horizontal self being our egoic personality, our body, our name, our jobs, our roles and titles in this place, and our vertical selves, of course, being that connection to source, the spiritual self that you just referenced in yogic terminology. And we just, our ancestors were tuned into this understanding, and some of us on the planet today are tuned into this understanding, but most of us just put all of our focus and attention on our horizontal selves, our accomplishments, our acquisitions, our positioning in society. And once we do the little bit of work and poking around required to recognize how flimsy and meaningless all of that is, when we can divest ourselves more and more of that self-importance as this horizontal identity that we've just made up for ourselves, that's when the spiritual nature naturally has the opportunity to come into our experience more, right? We all have a soul. There's not a single person walking the planet out there without a soul. And for most of us, learning to experience our soul nature the way you described, that's just an automatic direct path to learning to live as the joy that we are. That's where our joy resides, where our bliss, where our compassion for self and others. It's where it just naturally exists within each of us.
Now, in your book, you talk about how people have a joy set point. So just like you have a set point for your body weight, how can we raise our set point for joy to feel happier all the time?
Right. So again, it's not really about being happy all the time, because joy is the freedom to feel all of our natural emotions, right? Happiness is a perfectly lovely emotion to aspire toward. Most of us want plenty of happiness in our lives, but it wouldn't really even serve us to hang out there 24/7. We wouldn't even know we're happy without the contrast of the other emotions. So they're all good. They all have gifts. And when I talk about the joy set point, it's that baseline default setting where our happiness is always going to come to rest, where our joy is always going to come to rest. And we learn it really, really early on. It becomes the framework that we go on to create and manifest our life from. And it's inherited from our caregivers. We get the messaging from our society, from our neighborhood, from school, sometimes from a religion, about what is the level of enjoyment and happiness that we as a single entity here in this plane deserve and that we should expect. And that's what feels familiar to us. And the tendency to go back to that default setting is stronger than our desire to be happier. So we have to get really cognizant of that, right? Because we're all going to have that baseline, and we'll have days when it's bumped up and days when we dip down under it, but we're going to keep leveling off right there. And so we gain conscious understanding of the whole dynamic. So looking at what the factors were that created our own personal set point, getting clear that those factors were just interpretations we absorbed during those formative years, that's what allows us to start to change the framework. When we get clear on how arbitrary those early formed beliefs are, we can get proactive in creating a new framework.
Now, a lot of depression, and this is what I've discovered in my work, and two of my 10 books are about how to get out of depression naturally without drugs, the most recent being Banish the Blues Now. So what I find when I'm working with people with anxiety and depression, that a lot of depression is simply the result of constant pressure, whether it's self-induced pressure, pressure to be more, to have more, to get more, or pressure from the outside. Right. So how can choosing a life that is simpler and less stressed empower us to feel more joy, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think that goes back to how we're all creating our own suffering. No, nobody wants to look at that or acknowledge that, but it's actually very freeing when you can acknowledge it. We're all tribal creatures by nature. We all crave acceptance and approval from the tribe, whatever our tribe is. And we've collectively created this culture where no amount of accomplishment, no amount of achievement or acquisition is ever enough. We subscribe to this ridiculous notion of scarcity, where competition is somehow supposed to ensure that we get ours, right? And it's a completely false narrative. And we've all pretty much bought into it, but it keeps us on that hamster wheel, keeps us externally focused, where we're never going to be able to recognize the truth of the joy and bliss that we are at our core. So I absolutely agree that simplifying, deleting a lot of our artificial busyness, will be always a boon to our joy. And I think some folks stay busy, stay on the hamster wheel because they have a subconscious fear of the stillness too. And stillness is where we gain clarity around what's true for us. Lots of people, I think, are afraid to find out what that is. So they keep themselves perpetually distracted. So yeah, when you first delete some of that busyness and you're faced with more stillness, it can be uncomfortable for some people at first. And the goal is to push through that discomfort because the joy and bliss is waiting on the other side of it.
And with that, let's take a break and listen to one of our commercial sponsors here at UK Health Radio. You're listening to Catherine Kerrigan, medical intuitive healer, and I'm interviewing Lisa McCourt about joy. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Lisa McCourt, you're describing joy as an inner experience that we can choose to experience anytime. And I'll just talk about myself because I consciously set my vibration for the day, every day, first thing in the morning. And how I do that, I start with, I have a prayer practice. I say the Lord's Prayer, and then I have a whole long list of people that I pray for. And then I call in all my angels and I listen to my angels. And then after I get up out of the bed, then I play with my little dog. I have a Cocker Spaniel and I call it our morning hugs. And she's so joyful and she squeals with joy. And then I'm so happy. And so by doing those things, I literally start my day at as high a vibration as I possibly can every day, because I know that the vibration that I bring, it's like I'm going to show up and that's going to affect everyone around me. How important is it to set our vibration for the day consciously?
That's a beautiful example of how joy is a choice. I mean, everybody listening to that might roll their eyes, might say, who's got time for that? But it was nothing was very difficult that you just described there. Nothing required special training. Nothing was, you know, you had to like look it up in a book to figure out how to do it. We all can consciously make that choice, even when we don't feel like it. Sometimes we might wake up and not feel like it, just might feel like being in a poopy mood. But just realizing that, okay, that's a choice. I'm making that choice today. And if you choose that choice, then choose to really enjoy your poopy mood and just soak every bit of whatever you're getting out of it and choose for it to be a beautiful poopy mood experience. But recognize that you can do exactly what you just described, Catherine, and it will raise your vibration. Everybody knows the feeling within themselves when their body is expansive and open, indicating a high vibratory state, and when our body is contracted. And you just made a really great case for how simple and easy it can be to point your vibration in the right direction from the get-go.
Now, one of the things that we talk about here at the Natural Healing Show is that all illness is slowed down vibration. So in the, you know, the gold standard is, if you think about when you have a cold, you sit on the couch, you can barely move. It takes an effort to get up and make soup, right? And all healing happens when you raise your vibration. Does joy have proven health benefits when we consciously set our vibration for joy?
Absolutely. I mean, you just spoke to it. So many studies have shown that people who are happier in their day-to-day lives have healthier levels of body chemicals than those who experience fewer positive feelings. Happier people have healthier hearts, statistically, healthier cardiovascular systems. They're at a lower risk for diseases like diabetes and all those other diseases that involve hormone production. I mean, hormones are the chemicals of our emotions to a great extent. And so many studies have shown that depression is linked with those, the biggest health problems that we face today, right? These studies are measuring body chemical production, cortisol, dopamine, endorphins, and the results come back, you know, the same every time.
So recently I had the privilege of interviewing the author, Dr. Bernie Siegel. Dr. Bernie Siegel is a cancer doctor and author, and I interviewed him about natural healing for cancer, and it's like his solution, in a word, is just happiness.
Love, yeah.
Figure out how to be happy. In your opinion, Lisa McCourt, what is the relationship between physical health and joy?
Yeah, I think once we understand that our level of joy is truly a choice we can make, as you just described, and it takes some repetition. We're habitual creatures, every one of us. Habits aren't notorious for being super easy or quick to break. We have to put some dedication and commitment into changing up our habits. But once it really gets clear how our level of joy is truly a choice we can make, then we understand that our health is actually also a choice. And that's not something a lot of people, you know, easily subscribe to. But even the widespread understanding that an alkaline body is a healthy body as opposed to an acidic internal environment, even with that, it's been shown that keeping our body alkaline is not nearly as dependent on our food intake as people once thought, right? What we eat and drink has a relatively negligible effect on alkalinity as compared with what we're thinking and feeling. When we're joyful, we're naturally more affectionate and loving with others, which statistically, again, has been shown to dramatically lower cortisol levels. Cortisone, of course, being the, or cortisol rather, being the stress hormone that has that horribly negative effect on our immune system, our endocrine system, our brain health, especially the hippocampus. Anything that we can choose to do to elevate our joy, elevate our vibration will lower our cortisol levels. And that affects every area of our immunity and our physical vitality.
I really totally agree with what you're saying, Lisa McCourt. I have a wonderful book on Chinese food energetics. And that book talks about how different foods affect different organs and different acupuncture meridians. But at the beginning of the book, it says the most important thing is your relationship to the food. Mm. So if I'm fearful, oh my God, you know, this food isn't just right. It's got this and that and so on. That's going to affect my relationship with food. Now, I'm not a big believer in just like praying over junk food and hoping that it's not going to be bad for you. I mean, there's some, you know, happy medium in all of that, right? But I do agree with you that it's our attitude and our attitude about what we're eating that's even more important than the chemical consistency of the food itself. So you and I both agree that joy is an experience that happens to us when we are in connection and in awareness of our spiritual self. In your opinion, what specific steps can we take to align more fully with what you call our vertical self?
Yeah, those steps are exactly what I gathered for the book. The 52 weeks of the year are all a different step that we can take. And we do it in Joy School on a sort of a compounding way. Like we start with one thing, and then once we understand that and get better at it, we do another and another. But if you wanted to, you know, do one together, because you were speaking earlier about the you know, the energy centers, and I draw from a lot of teachers in Joy School and in the book. I reference a lot of my mentors and guides and teachers. And one practice that I love that's mentioned in Sue Mortar's book, The Energy Codes, is just central channel breathing. And it's a little bit complicated the way she describes it. But before I'd even learned her name for it, I was doing it in Joy School, where you just imagine just this bright, bright, bright column of light within you that just coincides roughly with your spine. That's the channel where our chakras are stacked. And then you want to inhale through your crown. So you're inhaling and you're imagining that you're pulling energy down into your crown from above you. And as you inhale, you feel this inner column of light getting even brighter and juicier and stronger. And you just allow your soft belly to expand with the breath you're taking in. And then as you exhale, you're imagining the breath shooting out down the bottom of the column, right down through your feet into the core of the earth. And your belly contracts, of course, as the air goes out. And then for your next breath, you reverse it. With the inhale, you're pulling the breath up from the core of the earth, up through the base of that light column. And your soft belly expands because the air is going in there and the column gets even brighter and shinier and richer. And then as you exhale, the breath exits through the crown and goes all the way up to source, God, divinity, whatever feels comfortable for you. And then you just repeat that again and again so that it just the breath is just going up and down, connecting you to the core of Pachamama and all the way up to however you interpret God, source, divinity. And it's a practice that brings your focus away from the external, away from that horizontal self concerns. It brings you into your inner essence, your chakra channel where your soul resides.
I love another one. McCourt, I love that you're talking about light. So recently I had another guest who is due to be interviewed on the Natural Healing Show. And she sent me an email right before her interview and said, you know, with all the events going on in the world right now, I just really can't be on your show. And I emailed her back and I said, I do understand. And in my opinion, the world needs healers now more than ever before. And I said to her, only light can drive out darkness. Only light. And in my humble opinion, not that I'm right, not that I know anything, when we focus on the light that we are here to bring, and each of us has a different light, whether it's the light of kindness or the light of healing or the light of friendliness or the light of compassion, or Lisa McCourt's talking about the light of joy. When we focus and when I focus on the light that I'm here to bring, then I can share that light. And I stay in that light. I stay out of the darkness and I can shine the light so that other people, like a lighthouse, can find their way when they're in my presence. So many of us, we have so much to do. We have bills to pay and kids to take care of and responsibilities. And we can be covered up with our own busyness. Why is it not selfish to focus on our own joy?
Yeah, that's been coming up so much in my world lately as well. I had a discussion, a podcast interview yesterday where we were talking about Stephen Mitchell's Diamond Sutra, where he makes, or his interpretation of the Diamond Sutra, where he makes it so clear that no matter how much charity work we do, no matter how much we give, no matter how much we focus on this never-ending game of whack-a-mole of solving all the world's problems, none of it could compare to awakening the light of transformation within our own souls, that we do more service to the world, to the collective energy by focusing on what's within us than we do with all the charity that we could possibly do, which doesn't mean don't reach out and don't help and don't give money or services or anything that you're called to do, because that's what we're here as part of the oneness, the human collective to do, is to help one another. But don't do it at the exclusion of taking care of your own light, because was it Goethe who said, if everybody swept their own doorstep, the whole world would be clean? The problem is this world where duality reigns, where concepts of duality are ingrained in all of us. We can't, the only way to break collectively out of this ridiculous notion of duality is to embrace the oneness and the non-duality that we're all working to awaken within ourselves when we do this kind of evolving work. The more we can awaken it within ourselves, we're going to be that light for others. And I always say, even just like, you know, look around your family and your friends, you know, like your partner doesn't need the burden of making you happy. Your friends don't need, you know, to be weighed down by contributing to your happiness. When you take care of your own joy, you become that for others. Everybody around you is going to have a better day when you're taking care of your joy, from your inner circle to the kid making your deli sandwich. Everybody that you interact with, their vibration is going to be enhanced by what you're putting out there. We're vibrational creatures in a vibrational world.
I love what you're saying. And I want to add also, years ago, I read something really wonderful about happiness, and this has always guided my life. And it said that there's three ways to be happy in life: physical pleasure, eating, moving your body, having sex, and enjoying the physical pleasure of being alive in your body. The second way to be happy in life is what's called soul satisfaction. Now, that's going to be different for each of us. So for one person, it may be soul satisfying to watch NFL football on a Sunday afternoon with their buddies. And somebody else, it might be walking in nature, on a beach, in the woods. But the final way to be happy in life is with what's called life meaning, which is to find meaning, the deeper meaning in everything that you're doing. And so right now, I think you and I are finding a lot of meaning in the work that we're doing in the world, right? No one can take that away from us. And so my understanding is that as we focus on physical pleasure, soul satisfaction, and life meaning, we can become happier and happier. So Lisa McCourt, any final thoughts for our audience?
Oh, I think we've touched on so many beautiful, beautiful concepts. I think if there's anything that I always wonder if I've said enough about, it's this notion of self-compassion, self-love. Self-love is such a fringy, sticky word these days. I feel like people feel like they know what it means, or some people just, you know, subconsciously don't believe they deserve self-love, or just like think that that's for self-indulgent people who are, you know, not me, I'm not a person who needs self-love. But it really is everything. And it really is just about having compassion for exactly where we are, right where we are in every moment that we're there. That's what allows all those stuck energies that we've stored away, all those little mini traumas that we weren't ever able to process properly at the time when we were experiencing them. That's what allows them to release. And we just, where our field gets more and more clear, the more we can have compassion for ourselves right where we are. And if you can't find it, you know, within yourself, get in a community where that's the whole goal, and you can get that support and that help to have the compassion, feel the compassion from others until you can get it set for yourself.
You've been listening to the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Catherine Kerrigan, medical intuitive healer, Amazon number one best-selling author. You can find out more about me and my work at CatherineKerrigan.com and UnlimitedEnergyNow.com. While you're there, definitely sign up for my newsletter so you can learn even more about how you can heal yourself naturally. Now, our guest today has been Lisa McCourt, author of Free Your Joy, The 12 Keys to Sustainable Happiness. And you can find out more about Lisa McCourt and her wonderful work at lisamccourt.com. And remember, when you give yourself permission to be as joyful, to feel as joyful as you can, and to raise your vibration, you literally heal yourself naturally, and you lift up everyone around you. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Natural Healing Show. Keep it natural. Be the Natural Healing Show.